Loaded Bases, Ben Verlander. How's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for having me on, man.
Hey, not a problem. Not a problem. I took off the day of work so I can make sure that this happens.
I appreciate that, man. It's a pump to be on for sure. Been a long time coming.
Oh, yeah. So what inspires your love for baseball?
Oh, man, it's just been a part of my life since literally the day I was born. You know, growing up in a baseball family, I'm just one of two kids. It's just me and my brother. So he's 9 years older than me. So the second I was born, I was at a baseball field. I was falling in love with the game. I was watching him. I was playing by myself off to the side, playing with friends off to the side, and just kind of grew up around the game and fell in love with it and wanted to play it for as long as I possibly could. And when I was done, just knew I wanted to stay in it because I never really, I never fell out of love with the game of baseball.
So yeah, you have made your staple in the game, and you've played a pretty good amount. So you were a two-way player at Old Dominion, but a certain conversation with your coach Chris Finwood changed that. How did that conversation change the future, and what did he say to you?
Yeah, I just, you know, I was, as you said, I was two-way. I was pitching, I was hitting, I was playing outfield, and I was doing both very average. And to be honest with you, it wasn't good enough for me. And look, there's nothing wrong with being an average Division I baseball player, but I was just like, I felt like there was more, but, you know, just kept working at what I was doing. And it was very difficult doing both. You know, you find yourself cutting corners at one thing when the pitchers are doing one thing. You try and figure out what the best time is to go do what the hitters are doing. And you kind of like cut corners on one or the other to better your game in another area. And it was so hard. And just remember after my sophomore year, we were doing you have exit meetings, right? So the year ends. And before you head home for the summer or head to your summer league, wherever you're going to play, you have your exit meeting with the coach. I just remember him calling me in and we were talking. He goes, "Hey, look, I don't want to be the one to tell you or to make you choose, but I do think you should choose one or the other. I think you should choose to become a pitcher or a hitter." And he's like, I don't want to make that decision for you, but I think you would be better off if you picked one. You're not going to get drafted to do both. So you might as well pick one and go with it. So I wanted to hit for multiple reasons. I wanted to play every day. Pitchers don't play every day. Yep. I wanted to be an everyday player. I wanted to be in the lineup every day. I loved hitting. And I wanted to have my own path. You know, it's no surprise to a lot of people that are in the baseball world that my brother went to Old Dominion as well. And obviously did really well there and was already having a fantastic professional career by the time I was having this conversation. And obviously Justin being a pitcher. I wanted to have my own path. I didn't want to every step of the way in my baseball career be compared to Justin. It's not fair to me. It's not fair to him. We're our own people. And but truly, I loved being a hitter more. And I felt that was the best option for me. So I very much so remember that conversation like it was yesterday. I will forever appreciate him for having that conversation with me. So I set my mindset that offseason to strictly focusing on hitting and strictly focusing on becoming better at just that. And it just clicked. It just clicked that off season. And it really felt like it freed me up and allowed me to focus on one thing. And that really did change the course of my, my baseball career. And then the following year, my junior year, was an All-American and ended up getting drafted.
And so, yeah, cause you were drafted in the 14th round, by the Tigers and say by the team that you're, brother was on. How was your draft story? I mean, like, how did that all go down?
Yeah, so I was playing summer ball up in the Valley League in Virginia, and we knew it was coming. So I had finished my junior year, and at this point the draft was still a little bit later. They bumped it up now because it's during the All-Star week, but they don't do that. They didn't do that not a few years ago anymore. This was in 2014, so it's 10 years ago, which is wild. Time for that. But yeah, I was playing summer ball, and Just remember my parents came up the day of the draft, and we just played it on the TV and on the computer, listened to it. And it was, I knew right around the time it was coming, but I didn't know who it was going to be. I actually got a phone call from my agent beforehand saying that the Dodgers were going to draft me if I ended up getting to them. Well, the Tigers ended up taking me the pick right before.
Oh, wow.
So I was like a pick away from ending up going to the Dodgers, but ended up going to the Tigers in the 14th. And yeah, it was an emotional day. I remember that. I remember watching it with my parents and my host family that I was staying at their house.
Yep.
And it was just, it's an interesting day. It's a day I'll forever remember. It's a day that, I always appreciated my parents and the way they handled it. You know, to me, it was just another step in the journey.
Yeah.
It isn't really fair. I just gotten drafted to be a professional athlete. And my parents really took the time to say, like, hey, like, appreciate this moment. Like, you're one of 0.0001% of people on the planet to get drafted, or of baseball players to get drafted, just because, you know, you've seen Justin go through this process doesn't mean like it's not one in a million type of process. So appreciate it. And we did, and it was an emotional day, and ended up going to my summer ball game that night. And they did like a ceremony for me out on the field.
That's
and,
awesome.
And called me out and just did an announcement. And it was a really, really special day for sure.
So you've had some pretty cool things happen to you in your minor league career. In 2016, you got to have a at bat against your brother. What was going through your mind like when you're coming up to the plate?
A million things, but really it was, so I was playing in the AA game on a field right next to him, and I knew he was pitching right next to me in the AAA game, and I really had never faced him, never in my life,
like, ever
in a batter's box. We've played like wiffle ball.
Pretty sure 9 years. Yeah.
But never like I'm in uniform, you're in uniform, this matters. Like let's get after it. So yeah. I went up to the minor league field coordinator and was like, hey, like, my brother's pitching right there. I've never faced him. I would love to. Can I go face him on that field? And he's like, oh yeah, I would love to see that. And so the way the game had just started. So the first batter was up, and he's like, I want you to hit second, not lead off. So go stand, like, don't stand out on the field, stand in the dugout. And right as the first batter gets out, then run up there. Cause he knew Justin wouldn't want to face me in a situation like that.
Yeah.
Where he was really prepping for the season. So the first guy flies out to right field. As Justin turns around to watch the ball get caught, I sprinted up into the box, and he turns around, and I'm standing there ready to hit. And my mind was just in a million different places. Like I knew he had to throw me a first pitch fastball. I knew he was going to throw it hard. I knew he was going to try and break my bat. So I just told myself, I'm just gonna put a good swing on this. I don't know where it's gonna go. I don't know what's gonna happen. But I'm gonna swing. And I did. First pitch I've ever seen from him, hit the homer, ran That's around crazy. The bases, touched home, ran back to my other field, and I have never faced him again.
One for one
with a homer forever.
Dude. And you'll never ever forget that. Do you ever remind him? Like about that at bat?
You know, it's funny. We talked about it. I would bring it up a lot after it happened.
Yeah.
And now just everyone else does. You know, it's like we will, if we're in a circle together, undoubtedly somebody brings it up. And it just, you know, it happens all the time, to be honest with you, because he's still playing. People know that I played. So it's just a natural conversation that comes up of like, oh yeah, you remember when you took Justin deep? And obviously I'm like, well yeah, and Justin laughs it off. So it really does, it comes up all the time now. I used to bring it up a good bit, now I don't. I feel like I don't have to because other people do it for me.
So it's I'd say because there's crazy things that always happen in the minor leagues. That's where I mean, because you were in the minors for 5 years, like, is there any like crazy stories that you will always remember?
Yeah, there's a bunch. Some I can tell on here, and some I can't. A lot that probably can't be told publicly. But yeah, you know, it's a time in my life that I wouldn't trade it for the world. It's a grind. It's difficult. It becomes a business. You know, you go from college playing for your brothers to your left and to your right, and you play for each other. Well, when you get to pro ball, it just becomes a business. And unfortunately, yeah, it becomes, until you're in the big leagues, it becomes a lot about like, well, I need to do better than that guy that's on my team because I want to progress. So it is, it's a hard transition. And obviously the baseball gets a lot tougher. So it was difficult, but I loved every single second of it. And the stories and the friendships that'll come and have come from it, I'll have forever. And I just remember my first, I feel like we could go on for hours about this, but I remember my first ever like professional experience. I get drafted, I go sign down in Florida, and then I get sent up to Connecticut where I played my first season. Mm. I just walked into the home stadium in Norwich that was going to be my home stadium. And I was like, oh man, this is awesome. This is professional baseball. Like that stadium used to be the AAA stadium for the Yankees. So the locker room was awesome. Everything was great. Well, the season starts, we go on our first road trip and we're in Burlington, Vermont. And I just remember like walking in that clubhouse and it was literally like a dirt clubhouse. It was tiny, tiny. The whole team couldn't fit in there. I was just like, oh my God, what is this? And we just ended up like, I don't know, the stories that came about from being in that, you go insane in there. We ended up like pranking one of the guys on the team. He was like our first rounder the year or two prior. And we like held him up to a pole and like taped him to a pole outside the locker. And oh man, so many like 10-hour bus rides. We had a bus ride from Bowling Green, Kentucky one year back to West Michigan where the Whitecaps are. It was like a 10 to 12-hour bus ride. We had to play a night game the night prior. So normally the day you leave, it's getaway day.
Yep.
So normally the games on getaway day are at daytime, like 1 o'clock games. Well, this day we had a night game. And we were talking to like the opposing GM. We were like, what's going on here? Like, why are we playing it? We have a 12-hour bus ride back to Grand Rapids, Michigan. He's like, oh, we have it in our contract with the city. Like we have to have a certain amount of night games like during the week or Sundays or whatever. So we're like sick. So naturally that game goes into extra innings and we end up getting on the bus. We have a 12-hour bus ride back to Grand Rapids. We don't get in until like 1 o'clock PM. And we had a 3 o'clock game. So it's just like, that's like the epitome of minor league baseball. Again, you wouldn't trade it for the entire world, but man, there is just some stuff that happens that leaves you scratching your head and wondering when you look back, like, how did I do that?
Yeah. No, because I played JUCO up here in Washington State, and it's a wood bat JUCO league. And I mean, the bus rides have the best stories from playing and traveling. It's been honestly like the best time, like traveling like with your buddies.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. So how was the transition from being a player to becoming the host of one of the top podcasts in baseball? Because you host the Flippin' Bats podcast, and I mean, you've had guys on there like Jeter, Julio, Otani. How was that transition going into that?
Yeah. So when I finished playing, like I told you from the beginning, I never fell out of love with the game of baseball. I knew I wanted to be involved somehow. I just didn't know what I wanted to do, how I wanted to do it, what direction that would take me, where it would lead me. And just remember, like, had some original conversations with my agent. I didn't have an agent for the media when I first stopped playing, but had some met through mutual friends, and he was basically like, hey, I'd love to like get you involved in the media space and see if you like it. So very early on, I was living in Virginia and ended up going to do some things up in New York for DAZN and MLB Network and loved it. Went on air there a couple times, fell in love with it and knew that's what I wanted to do. And that's the field I wanted to be in. And actually almost was hired by MLB Network originally. And like right as like the day I was going to sign the contract is the day that the world shut down for COVID and everything stopped. So I went back to Virginia and was just holding out hope that things would turn around. And obviously the world didn't very quickly, and it was a very long time, and things changed and hiring freezes happen and all that stuff. So just ended up through my agent having a friend that he knew that works at Fox Sports, got a meeting out here and flew out to LA for the meeting, and ended up doing a test. It was a World Series watch party. So I hosted a World Series watch party for Fox with Rick Ankiel, Nick Swisher, and Tino Martinez. And yeah, I guess it went well, and Fox ended up hiring me on full time. And ever since, I've just committed my craft to being better at what I do. And every day I try and get better. I look back now on stuff that I did, like the first stuff that I did. I look back now on stuff that I did last year. Like every day I try and improve and try and work on something to get better. And it's just led to where I am right now today. And I love where I am right now today. I know that there's still so much room for growth. But that's kind of the story of how I ended up getting here. Just finished playing and figured out what I wanted to do and committed myself and committed to getting better and better every day at that.
I'm glad that you have that podcast. I mean, because that's like one of the top podcasts like that I listen to.
Thank you.
I like how you guys format it. I love like the new segments that you guys have. And
yeah, it's honestly awesome. even Flippin' Bats has evolved so much, you know, like from the, again, looking back from the beginning or even to a year ago, like it will continue to evolve the way I want to talk to players, the way I want to interview guys, the way I want the show to feel, different segments. It's all about like, you know, just figuring out what works and going with that. And yeah, the show is always evolving. So one, I appreciate what you said about it. And I'm excited for it to continue to grow and grow and grow. You know, this is only in the grand scheme of things, hasn't been a show for that long. So hopefully it just continues to grow and get better. And every year the show and myself continue to get better.
I went back and I listened to like my earlier podcasts, and they are terrible. I mean, I had no idea like how to interview people or like how to do that. And then, cause now I'm at like this will be episode 78, and it's been, and I took that year off like for my son, and now like coming back to it, I feel I am like ready to, and then like to hit the ground running and go.
Yeah, that's it. It is. It's funny and like scary looking back on the first couple of episodes and realizing, you know, it's a good thing because you realize how far you've come, but you're like, oh my God, I put that out for people to listen to.
Yeah, it's bad. It is so bad. So in 2022, you had the opportunity to do Searching for Shohei. How was that, and how much did that mean to you to be able to go on that journey?
Oh, I mean, it means everything. And you know, one, it means everything because Shohei doesn't do stuff like that. He doesn't do interviews like that. And to be the one person to sit down with him in the US for an hour is something that I will forever be appreciative of. And the way it all came together is even more special to me because basically just ended up going and getting in touch with his agency and his people. And it all came together because they wanted to do it for me because they're appreciative of the support that I had given him over time and since he came in the league. And they made it very well known that look, when Shohei first got into the big leagues, there were a lot of people that thought it was a gimmick or a joke or that he wouldn't be any good or that he'd have to pick one or the other. And he's like, you believed in him and they wanted to give me the opportunity to be able to do that. And, you know, they chose me for a reason to be able to do that. And, to be able to say that one of the greatest players of all time, and to me, the most talented player of all time, wanted to do the interview just because of me being able to do it and me supporting him, will forever mean so much. And it ended up being the journey of a lifetime to be able to go over there and really just see from scratch where it all started, why he became the player he is, how he became the player he is, people he interacted with, like Mr. Kuriyama, his manager over there, and coincidentally, the manager for Team Japan when they won it all in the World Baseball Classic. And then being able to sit down with him for that hour. It was an emotional journey. I figured out a lot about him, a lot about myself. And yeah. I feel like the product that came from it showed that. And I'm really proud of what we put together.
So, yeah, because I've watched that Searching for Shohei twice in the past week just to get a feel for it. And I'd say, because you said that you want to be known as the number one greatest Shohei Ohtani fan of all time. And
I feel like I'm on my way.
Dude, you are. I mean, because I live about two and a half hours away from Seattle. Okay. And for the whole time that he's been a Angel, we would drive over to go watch him play. So I've seen him play probably 20 plus times. But I mean, like every time it's a 3-hour drive, like just to watch him play.
Yeah.
And then, but now, like, I was thinking about it, and the only way for me to watch him play this year is if I fly down to LA, because the Dodgers don't go to Seattle. Yeah. So that's my downside. And I mean, I'm not the number one greatest fan, cause that's your title, but
sounds like you're up there though.
Dude, I want to say I'm number two. I'm firmly saying that. I'm like, with you being a two-way player and him being a two-way player, does that, I guess, like, is that one of the reasons why you believe that he's one of the greatest players of all time?
I think that's more of a reason of why I started following him so early on. You know, when I was playing pro ball, I remember hearing his name, because you end up playing with a lot of guys and getting friends and teammates that go and play in Japan and then come back, or vice versa. Well, I have a buddy of mine that played in Japan and came back and was like, you guys need to watch this guy named Shohei Ohtani. They're like, he throws 103 miles an hour and he hits balls 500 feet. And I was like, oh my God, what? And he's a two-way player. Like, he actually pitches and hits. And so I just started hearing through word of mouth, started following his career in Japan. So then by the time he came over to the U.S., I was like, this guy's the real deal, and wanted to support and talk about his career and what he was going to accomplish as much as I could. In terms of me being a two-way player, I think that just allows me to have more of an appreciation and an understanding of what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the work for him doesn't come on the field. The work comes off of the field, and all of the work that he's able to put in to be as good as he is as a two-way player is truly mind-blowing to me. I mean, we talked about me being a two-way player and needing to pick because I was average at both. Well, I would have told you it's impossible to do what he's doing at the professional level, much less at the big league, in the major leagues. So I think it just gives me a really good understanding of what he's doing behind the scenes, how much work he's putting in. And that just allows me to be able to talk all the time about, hey, guys, this is the real deal. This is the most talented player we've ever seen, and appreciate it while he's able to do this. Because who knows? Who knows how long he's able to pitch and hit? Will it be 2 more years, 5 more years, 10 more years? I hope, but what's realistic? I don't know. So I just hope everybody appreciates it while it's happening.
Oh, it is absolutely amazing. I mean, like, I've seen him pitch 3-4 times now, but then he goes up to bat and he hits doubles off the wall.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. It is. I mean, I could talk Ohtani for hours.
Yeah.
I mean, easily my favorite player. But I am ecstatic that he is a Dodger now, and he's going to create
good for the game. It's good for the game for sure.
Hands down. So, okay, what is your future plans in the industry? What are your goals?
Yeah, you know, I feel like I get asked that question a good bit from people that, you know, from family, from people that care about me and my career. And I wish I had a better answer. I love what I do. I love what I do. And this is the first thing that I've done in this field. Yeah. And I love working for Fox Sports. I feel like in this industry, what I've gotten to know over the last few years is that you never really know what the future holds. And there's so much more, in this space, in this baseball media space that I know I haven't done. I know I love flipping bats. I love growing that. And I hope that continues for a long, long time to come. And I know there's other opportunity, you know, like I've never called a game in a booth. Would I like that? Would I have an opportunity to do that? I don't know, but I definitely am in the mind space where I would love to try. I would love to try things and see if I'm good at it and see if people like it and see if it's something that I want to continue to do. But I do know that I love where I am. I love what I do, and the future, I'm excited for, while also acknowledging that I don't know what it looks like. And that's kind of exciting. And that's also part of being in this space, is just continue to grow what you're doing, continuing to give your all to exactly what you're doing, while also continuing, especially in this day and age, growing your own brand, growing your socials, growing, you know, a Twitter, a TikTok, your Instagram, and just putting out content there is equally as important, because the game is continuing to get younger. Game of baseball, the fan base, I know that's a big emphasis that Major League Baseball wants, is getting a younger fan base. And I'm just really excited for the future and sort of the unknown. The unknown can be exciting in many ways. And the unknown in this industry, I feel like, is exciting. And whatever happens, I know I want to be in the baseball world for a long time to come. And I know that I'm going to continue to work on my craft in every aspect that I possibly can.
So, and I have a firm feeling that you can do that. You have tons of talent in what you do, and
thank you.
A lot of good knowledge about the game, and
I appreciate that. And it's not without, you know, it ain't easy. And as you know, you have a show. It's not easy. And I do feel I feel proud of where I've gotten to at this point in my career. And I feel proud to know that I feel like I'm going to look back in years to come on this moment and think that even this is just the beginning. So it's a lot of hard work. And I a lot of people might not understand that, but you know, things don't just fall on your lap and all of a sudden you become successful. And I don't like saying that I'm successful, because again, I want to look back in years and say like that was just the beginning. So it ain't an easy process, but it's one that if you really commit to and really commit to working on, it can be a fun, special journey. And I like to think that I'm on that journey.
I'm learning that with the larger that my brand and the podcast grows, on social media, it's almost like that more and more people have stuff to say back to what I post.
Woo, you know, I get that,
dude. That is my next question. How do you deal with people that misunderstand you on social media?
That process has changed, I would say, over the last few, really over the last, I don't know, like last year, middle of the, I feel like I really tried to focus on not letting it get to me. And you know, not that I just feel like from the beginning, and this will continue, there will always be people that have said that I got my job because of my last name, that I'm having success because of my last name, that, you know, you hate this team, you hate that team, oh my god, you love this player too much, whatever it may be. And if you let yourself get consumed by that, it will be the end of your sanity. you know, like I just spent so much time replying to people and getting worked up over it and thinking of like a clever response so that people wouldn't think I'm mad or that I care, because I don't. For people that think they're clever saying that I am where I am because of my last name, well, they don't realize that I've been getting that since I was in middle school. And my brother was, you know, when my brother was 21, I was 12 years old. My brother was in the big leagues at 22 years old. I was 13. I've been getting that since I was 13. When I made my little league, or when I made my middle school baseball team, I heard the same stuff. When I made my high school JV team, I heard the same stuff. When I made my varsity team, I heard the same stuff. When I went to a Division I school, same stuff. When I got drafted, I heard the same stuff. When I was an all-star professionally, same stuff. When I got this job, it's the same stuff. So these people that think they're clever, I've been hearing it forever. And at a certain point, you just start to understand, I have accomplished so much. And I would be an idiot to not acknowledge that, of course, having the last name gets people's eyeballs on things or might like open a door. But it's ultimately my job to be the one to break into that door and to prove that I'm worth being there. At a Division I school, I got there. I didn't play much. I didn't get playing time my junior year because of my last name. I got playing time because I committed to being a hitter. And I became damn good at it and got drafted. Yep. I became an All-American that year. So I didn't get drafted because of my last name. And I didn't make All-Star games because of my last name. And I didn't have a show that became the number one sports podcast in all of Japan because of my last name. These things happen because you earn it. And it's just something that I've learned over time and have continued to learn, that you just can't give your emotional energy to those people. Just keep working on what you do. Keep working on what you're passionate at and keep improving at it. And ultimately, at the end of the day, you'll look up and be hopefully where you want to be. And if you're not, well, then keep working harder. And that's a lot of what playing baseball taught me, especially professionally. It's the slogan of minor league baseball. If you don't like it, play better. And that goes for so many different things. And you know, in every aspect of life. If you don't like it, play better. If you don't like it, do better or work harder. And that's always going to be the answer for me. And that's kind of how I've learned to just deal with the people that have things to say. I've been dealing with it since I'm 13 years old. It ain't going to change. I'll probably be dealing with it when I'm 80 years old. But here we are, and just going to continue to work hard and hopefully get to a place where I want to be.
I love that. That was the amazing answer. I mean,
appreciate that.
Yeah, you've been through a lot and you've worked your ass off and to get to where you are today. And I mean, it's not, I mean, like, not everyone has a baseball card. You know? So
love it.
Yeah, it's you've earned it, man.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Yeah. It's been cool. And again, I wouldn't trade my older brother for anything. I love him. I love everything about the relationship we have. And I feel like at a certain point I realized that I wanted to have my own path.
Yep.
And no matter how long you commit to that path, people will always have stuff to say about it. And you got to realize you just don't give them that energy. Just keep doing what you're doing. And ultimately, I think you'll feel great about yourself.
And then I can wrap up a little bit. So what would be your advice to someone out there, like, that wants to get into podcasting or content creating, and they are afraid to put out their thoughts and opinions on the subject? What would your advice to them be?
I think the overarching advice is just do it, just post it, and just get your content out there. And I guess, one, without being reckless with that answer, the answer is, well, why do you feel scared or hesitant to put something out? Are you worried about the response? Are you worried that you said something you shouldn't? That's probably where you should start. If you say something that's not good, then maybe rethink what you had to say. But if you feel confident and comfortable with what you're saying, post it. Even if you think one person's going to watch it, post it. If you think 10 people are going to watch it, post it. If you think 9 of the 10 people are going to hate it, post it. Just get your stuff talked about, make the content, post it. Don't worry about how many people see it because it truly doesn't matter. You just want to create content, let people associate you with what you want to talk about, and then just keep growing, keep posting, keep sending your stuff to people. Don't be afraid to cold call people or to take a piece of content that you're proud of and send it to people saying, hey, I would love to have an opportunity to do anything at all for you. And just that is, to me, the easy answer to this question is make the content, post the content, be aggressive with what you want to do with it, and go from there.
My big thing is that I will sometimes like double take on like what I am going to post on Twitter just because I don't want to hear certain responses. But I've gone through that, and it's been absolutely, I love it because now I don't really give two shits about what people say.
How'd you become a Cubs fan being from Washington?
So my grandma is from Chicago, and then her mom was a Cubs fan and so on. So I'm like fifth generation Cubs fan.
Okay.
And it's I mean, cause I'll go to Chicago once a year to go watch them play. And then, and then the Cubs come to Seattle now every 2 years, which is cool. So I'm gonna go up there and go watch them. And, I mean, like since I was a baby, I mean, like I've always had like my Cubs blanket and all that stuff.
You know, I have like 4 stadiums left that I have never been to, and somehow Wrigley Field is one of them.
No way.
I have never been to Wrigley Field. And
no shit.
At this point, it's just like, okay, I gotta, at
Dude,
some
you
point,
have to do it.
This is gonna be, it's now I feel like I gotta hold out for something incredible. But yeah, it's like, I can't believe it. I've never been to Wrigley.
Yeah, no, it's a, well, even though Wrigley is probably, I mean, and being a Cubs fan is probably my second or third favorite stadium. But yeah, dude, you have to go to Wrigley.
Yeah.
Damn. I can't believe that.
Me, I mean, both Chicago's are on there. But
I mean, I wouldn't want to go to a White Sox game anyway, so that's tough on that one. But well, Ben, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Of course, man. I had a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, of course.